Enjoy the show. Play on my channel.
But I have done a little research into you, sir. I know we spoke previously before because I'm super excited about the Heroic Awards.
Wait, are we live right now? Are we live?
Oh, I soft cut in there. Yeah, man. We go. Okay. I record and then I usually start off with a nice little intro like that. I record afterwards because it is so much easier squeezing in a bunch of stuff because I'm actually starting as a paid wrestling camera guy,
which is awesome. I watch those videos. They are convincing, fun, funny. Exciting. I mean, they go fast paced. It's great. I was very impressed with it.
So I'm starting that up. So especially because I want to keep this podcast as a hub for indie content creators, especially indie comic book content creators, which I think you have the ultimate thing with the Heroic Awards. But then I start looking into your own comic of Orphan Bloodline. And even at the intro description, you have me.
Oh yeah, which part do you like the best? I'm interested.
Well, I like how you make it your own by mixing cybernetics, mysticism, and biochemistry in with this blood disorders becoming blood powers that collide with mm-hmm. bleeding edge biotech in an ancient shadow war. I love the premise, and the ancient part sets it back so that way you can just suspend your disbelief, and especially blood magic, man. I mean, I'm an anime fan. Yeah. They play on that all the time, and it's always great.
Right. Yeah. So when I was thinking this up, I said, this is very different because we're bringing in real science, real blood disorders, real cybernetics, real technology, real mysticism. If you go the mysticism route in astrology, which I'm not really a huge fan of. But if you go that route, it's right in line with all those doctrines, whatever. Mm-hmm. And we take what's real and we throw it into a D&D style, you know, D20 game and or a comic book or a fantasy world, which I'm doing all of those actually. And how it's different is instead of saying fireball or I can fly now or, you know, Superman, you know, instead of doing this kind of like kind of almost a little bit cheesy now, sci-fi that or fantasy, it's real life. It's real blood disorders people can relate with. In fact, one of my editors has hemochromatosis, the same disease as the main character in the comic book series. And he started talking to me about hemochromatosis and what he's gone through. It's not as extreme as like obviously cancer, but it's still not great. In my comic, the only kind of writer's freedom I give myself is I can take the disorders and I can make them more than they are or more extreme than they are or more deadly than they are. And I kind of elaborate it in that regard. But when it comes to the actual diseases, the actual cybernetics, the technology, it's all real stuff, which I think puts you in a basis of reality while you're going into this fantasy world.
Yes. And especially for people like myself and Mike, we had a podcast on I called it my Christmas cast, but it was the day where I literally did like a 4-hour podcast with Brandon Spicer in the front half, Mike in the back half. We went everywhere, but one of my favorite things to mention is the Younger Dryas impact theory, to where about 12,000 years ago, a giant meteor hit the ice sheet and melted it, creating a cataclysmic global flood. And that reset humanity. Everybody, you know, had to relearn everything like they were a toddler. And Ancient Apocalypse is a really great documentary, which talks all about it with Graham Hancock. Awesome, amazing author. But it kind of reminds me of that because you're bringing it out to like, this is ancient times. It could have been like that. That's what really tickles my brain of like, this is just like my favorite thing over here. And it's your idea, but my brain just links the two together like extension cables, you know, you just click them right together.
I think the best lore is a lore in these fantasy worlds that we're building as writers and creators. The best lore is something that harkens back to some kind of historical truth or historical belief. If you can hearken it to reality to some degree, then the readers can say, well, maybe Pharaoh did, maybe the god worship was that way 3000 BC, or maybe the Norse gods came from, you know, the Babylonian gods, and there's a connection there, or maybe the Chinese Qi is actually god power in reality, in like in application. And we can start taking these beliefs that are sometimes pseudoscience, sometimes astrology, sometimes real religion. We can take those and put them into a fantasy world with some alteration and some, you know, make-believe, but with the basis of reality. And I think it really comes down to a solid scenario. I mentioned D&D earlier. I'm turning my comic book into a D&D game based on the 5e D20 series. And what's really cool about it is when you're creating characters in D&D, ranger, you know, mercenary, you know, assassin, this kind of a thing. Pretty standard, very basic, 50 years ago, totally great, but it's kind of been around for forever. And in my game, you get to pick two of the four powers. The four powers are blood disorder / blood powers, mystic power, so that means you could be chi, it could be god, deity power, tech power, which is whatever era you're in, and you can play in ancient, you can play in classical, you can play in Renaissance, you can play in Dark Ages, you can play in modern, you can play in future and space race, you can play in all these different time frames, but base it in Earth, history, and country, and culture, and religion, and real science that we've had at the time. Choose your technology, that's the third power, and the fourth power is sacred ancestral items of power, which are items that were used in the past by people who had blood disorders or mystic powers, and those powers were imbued onto that item. So one of those options is you play in the Dark Ages. The tarot cards are being created right around 1380 is what we guess. Before 1400, the first tarot cards were created. We don't have the exact time. We don't have the exact time, and so guess who made them? Someone with a blood disorder made the tarot cards. And my one of my characters in the book, she's having a lot of brain seizures from seeing the future because of her blood disorder. Mm. And she creates tarot cards as a medium to transfer her power and get it onto away from her body somewhat, so she doesn't have that her brain melting effect. It's like a conduit. You would think as a wizard, you would use your wand as a conduit. So she creates the first tarot deck, and then if you have this tarot deck in the future, it actually predicts the future like tarot decks should, because it's using the power that's been imbued on them. So that's the ancestral items of power, sacred ancestral items, which is SAI or Psi. So there's Psi power, tech power, mystic power, and blood power. Anyway, that's going to go, we're going to go on too long with this.
Dude, we literally, I have two episodes to edit up, which is a big, big order. I have set a meeting to do a recap of one of the episodes, but Mike, myself, Aleem Legit, and Frank Percy, our DM is Joe Clay. We have a Dungeons and Dragons podcast coming out on this network called Hit Points and Half Measures. And
okay,
it's like a 3-hour session that I have to edit. I'm going to add in the recap because episode one, I was sick, so I lost my voice. And during an interview the day before, I broke my mixing board because I stomped on a cable and it jostled the female connector loose. I had an epic bad day, so I'm just going to recap that and then move forward. But we have another session scheduled for this Friday, and this is my first time playing D&D. I'm a Draconic Bloodline Sorcerer, level 4.
Yep.
Mike is a Rogue Assassin, and we have Frank Percy, who's our Brawler, and then Aleem Legit is our Paladin. So we're working on getting another fifth in there, but we have a nice group going in here. And Joe's actual story is interactive with all of, you know, his whole world. So there's a lot of stuff there. Mike sent him the image that went around on D&D fans or one of the D&D Facebook groups of a bumble bear. Mike sent it to him within a minute. He was like, hang on, let me stat this real quick. And now that's just a monster that we have to look forward to at some point.
But right. Think of the things that we could build with what we harness from.
All right, I didn't think about that.
Absolutely. You know, one of the hard things that I came across in creating monsters for my game, because it's based in the real world, if you will, is how do I create a monster when monsters don't exist? And then I was reading Timothy Fling's cryptids comic book. And I said, there we go. We'll just use cryptids. So I go to this, the AI, the learning language model AI people. My favorite is Grok, G-R-O-Q. Q is the important part. Yeah, G-R-O-Q. I typed in, give me cryptids. And it gives me, I must have had 50, 60 cryptids pop up. I didn't know there were all these weird beliefs in the third lake of Belgium or something. I didn't know there was all these weird things that were in the world. But there's a lot of weird cryptids and beliefs that animals, monsters, Loch Ness is one of them, you know, that's out there. And I'm just using those in my game because it's an easy earthbound monster base.
Yeah.
Four men walk the earth.
I mean, especially if you just look at, like, mythic monsters. I mean, Jesus, Japan and China has you covered far as you want to go.
That's true.
Yokai. That's like their entire mythology.
Yeah, you just gave me a good point, because I just typed in general cryptids, and what the learn language model gives you is ones that are known to Americans. But that's, I mean, ours are kind of cheesy, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
The Mexicans ones are pretty cool. But the Oriental ones are, you're right, those are the best. So I'm going to grab those from
the book. You also have the Celtic, because I'm a huge mythology fan. My brother had bought this one book on Audible, which was, it was Sumerian, Babylonian, Chinese, Japanese, Greek, Greek, Roman are kind of the same thing, but Greek mythology. And it went through all the major hit points. It was a bunch of them, but Celtic were the weirdest ones, because it was almost like these people just wanted to scare you.
Do you ever read the Dresden Files?
I haven't.
The Dresden Files is one of the best book series of all time. I'm stating it right here. It's one of the best book series for fantasy reading I could ever do. And he has a fetish with Celtic gods. So he'll bring in these weird monsters or gods or whatever, and in the end you'll be like, oh, that was a Celtic god that I never heard of, because we don't even talk about him anymore, but they're all over his book. So if you like Celtic, you definitely should read the Dresden Files. It's one of the best series that's ever written in any way, so you need to get in it.
Yeah, I'm a huge history buff. That's why I didn't even plan on this podcast of having an interview long format interview platform for indie comic creators. It just kind of I stumbled into it with Frank Percy, because he brought me into this. I'm going to be doing the video work for his Kickstarter of Kariba the Hunted. He brought me into the side story to that, which was the first thing comic book wise I've ever wrote. And I got the bug. And then I met Mike. He was like, hey, I'll edit it. I have an idea. And in between all these plates I'm juggling, the gears are still turning. I just have to put it down on paper. But, it's being around all the creative people like you guys are really helping. It's almost like this idea was like in the back of my head, just kind of gnawing at me.
Right. Yeah.
And then Frank unlocked the door. He was like, look, you just go through here. Do it. And he pushed me in, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. So
Yeah.
I want to build up other people who, like me, may not have actually thought they could do this, because it's something that a lot of people don't really think that they're able to do, because I'm not Mark McKenna. I'm not, I'm not this guy, that guy.
Well, you know, the thing about comic book writing, that's been my path. It's everybody's path is their own, but my path has been this. I had what I thought was a cool idea. And then I wrote and I wrote and I wrote for like 6 months. I was writing 10, 12 hours a day. Literally, I was just puking story onto the paper and editing and going back and doing dialogue and going back and doing panel planning for the artwork. And I was really, really deep in it. And I knew it wasn't right, but I knew I had to get it out there so I could see it and then go back again and re-edit. So what happened with me is I had the first two books drawn up, and then I could actually see what I was seeing in my head. I could see it on paper and kind of how it did or didn't take, how it did or didn't work. So I'm going back and redoing number one and two with some very important artistic changes, dialogue changes, scene changes, pages, drop this page, add this page. So sometimes you can do it on paper and be fine. Sometimes you want to go ahead and do the art, or at least sketch the art out, like paneling, so you have an idea. New writers, you really don't know what you don't know, so you got to jump in there. And there's no right path, and sometimes you're going to lose $5,000 in creation. You have to redo, and expect that. That's why I always tell everybody, expect that you're going to be, it's going to be a process. You're not going to be a pro from day one, and you're going to learn from your mistakes, and you can take your time, or you can go fast and go back. And there's different ways, and I'm up for whoever can do whatever. And probably what happens is the best of us are going to get it right the first time, and those are going to be our Mozarts of the indie comics. And guess who's going to promote those? Heroic Awards. Transition. Transition.
That was a beautiful segue. Beautiful segue. Before I absolutely destroyed my mixing board, I had a button for that. But tax time, we'll see if it's friendly to me. So maybe I may be stepping this game up. But I'm really impressed with the Heroic Awards, because even when we were talking, it was really inspiring to know that there's another group of nerdy guys out there that are looking to build people up. Like, it's one of the core mottos that my business partner, mm-hmm. Chris, that you met, it's one of the core values that we use to build our company, is that,
right.
One, he handles the business. I handle the creative stuff. And we play off of each other in the right way, because we've known each other forever. And at the core, having that friend that, you know, I could actually run a business with. It is not easy. It's like finding a roommate.
Right.
It's you think you could do it with somebody, but then, like, it just goes the wrong way. But with Perjangers, we try to build everybody else up, and we've gotten involved with the Great Media Comic Con around us. Frank Percy, my usual co-host, as well as Chris, they're involved this year with the second year of this con. I was involved in the forming of the first year. The second year, they have the Media Theater screening. First time in 30 years screening a film, and it's Back to the Future with Claudia Wells, who played Jennifer, a 2-day event instead of one, and a whole bunch of guests like Mark McKenna, like James Stokes, like James Swanson. So having a big local con that's close to you is really important, especially for people like Aleem, who was nominated for the Heroic Awards, to tie it back in there. See, I can do a segue as well, sir.
Ooh, that's nice. Yeah, you know, nice. when I first had the idea of Heroic Awards, I was thinking there's no real indie comic award. Now, I don't want people to be screaming at me. We have great awards with Eisner. They've brought some amazing books to forefront. One of my favorite, Fables. They were a big proponent of Fables. Yeah. I love that story. So I'm an advocate of Eisner. Anything that they say is good, I'm going to read, because it's probably great, you know? Then there's Ringo, which I like a lot. They started more, in my understanding, they started out more as like a fantasy book, kind of an award ceremony. And then they turned into adding comic books more heavy, because there was so much energy behind comics. And I like that too. They do a great job. I like the fun naturedness of Ringo, the professionalism of Eisner. But when I was looking at him, I just didn't see any of the books that I was buying on Kickstarter. Last year, I bought 60 books. I'll try to, you know, keep that going. But as I got the books in and I started reading them, some of them weren't that ready to go. Maybe mine was one of them that wasn't ready to go. But then there were some that were like gems, were really good. I looked at the Kickstarter campaigns, and they had 30 or 70 backers. And I'm like, if you're going to get a classroom to read the book and that's the extent, then it's just not, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. We need to bring real awareness to really great stories. And that's what I hoped that Heroic Awards would do. So I started putting out feelers with people saying, hey, do we want to do this? And the feedback was unanimous that we should never do it. And I said, well, why is that? And they said, well, nobody wants to hear that their art isn't good. And nobody wants to hear that their book isn't. Everybody wanted just happy thoughts and boost everybody up and everybody wins and it's all positive. And to be honest, I don't think that's how success is garnered. You don't get success by everybody telling you you're good when you're actually not that great, right? Mm-hmm. You need to hear that you're 100%. Not good. You need to hear. And so,
that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to hear. You can't grow if somebody tells you, hey,
yeah,
quality needs to improve. Mm-hmm. But this was great.
I was also right. thinking that's also a horrible way of looking at an awards. Like, oh, well, they think I'm a failure. No, you just didn't win. You got nominated. Right. There are movies that put that on. Well, they used to because they don't exist anymore. But on the case of their DVD, it was nominated for this.
Right. Right. Yeah. 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 So we did strive hard to show everyone that's nominated. If you go to the Facebook page, you'll see them all. There's, I think we have 220 books, something like that. I don't remember the number. Something like that, that are nominated for the Heroic Awards in all the categories total. Categories are a slew of them, including all the technical categories like line art and colors and cover art and best story. Those are all great. But also in the end, you have best publisher of the year. You have comic book of the year. You have Lifetime Achievement Award, which we're going to be doing in a few months as we get some more feedback from the judges. This is an ongoing process. Right now, we're doing our award ceremony April 27th at C2E2 in Chicago. We were honored that they would accept us into this program, into their event. It's, I mean, we're going to be the capstone Saturday night event, and it makes me happy that they saw us as such a boon to them, and we find them to be a boon to us. We're going to have a big room in there, and we're going to fill it up. It's going to be way full. And I think we have 11 media partners. And, I mean, people are just jumping on board now. And what I said today to our group, we were doing an advisory board meeting, what I said was, when this first started out, people were like, no, don't judge us. And now everybody wants to submit because they really want it to be judged. And it was weird. It's weird how it was a juxtaposed from the initial to now. But I think people have really seen it as legitimate. They see it as an official awards program. They like that we're unbiased. We have 100-plus judges that are particular to the individual sphere they're judging in, whether it's a line artist or if it's a writer. I mean, they're going to only judge the best writing or best story. They're not going to judge the best cover art. And that's different. Other awards programs, they say, these are our 5 judges. They're judging everything. And maybe they like a certain artist better, and maybe they're going to vote for that person more, and then the person's going to win. And we're not going to do that. We want it to be really a grassroots thing, but also unbiased and a real juried, scored, critiqued award system. And I think we've built that.
I mean, it's good. It's good to hear how it's not just 5 judges. You know, it's not the Academy Awards. It's not like that. It's you're taking this original idea, which, you know, it's inspiring to a lot to where, yeah, a lot of people would, I imagine, say in an initially, oh, I don't want you to judge me. I think I don't need that kind of letdown. But that's also the person who's probably, you know, very modest. And they have that amazing idea. And once they do get that, it's going to boost them to the next level that they never imagined they could get to.
Yeah. Yeah. On that note, let me just reiterate this. We're going to definitely get out those nomination gold seals of approval to all our nominees. They can slap on their covers of issue 3 of their series. You know, this series was nominated. I love that we'll be able to do that. And also, an additional step we have is just announced today on Facebook, Antarctic Press, a 40-year indie publisher for comics, has agreed to fast-track our winners. Now, this does not mean it's a guarantee. Not saying anybody's books are going to be automatically accepted and not accepted, or you have to send it over, but for indie writers and artists who want their work to be seen by a major publisher with the hopes to get it in national distribution, they're going to fast track our winners. And if both sides agree on this, on the end result, then they're going to go right to, you know, Diamond, you know, for distribution, which to me is a big win. You know?
Wow, Diamond is the big name. For those of you that don't know, he just name dropped 2 really big things. C2E2, which is, from what I'm told, the second biggest Comic-Con in the country. And then Diamond Publishing is the publishing company.
Yeah, they have a long track record. Right now it's Diamond and Lunar that are the big two. It's very hard to get in those books. Antarctic is in those books. We wanted to get a publishing sponsor to agree to sit down at a high level with our winners to get past that initial application process and internal operatings that these publishing houses have. I wanted to get past the red tape and give our winners a direct front seat with the owners of the company, I talked with the COO of Antarctic. They were elated to have this opportunity. Again, nothing is guaranteed. If you win Best Letter, for instance, but your book is lettered amazingly, but really it's just not that good of a story, then maybe that'll be a power, maybe that'll be part of the discussion. But if you win, you know, Best Line Art or Best Comic of the Year or Best Story or, you know, maybe your Publisher of the Year, you're going to be seen strongly by them. And I hope that yields people being published this fall across the country in a local comic shops. I mean, that's what we're trying to do. As indie people, we're trying to get our name out, trying to get the book out there. Antarctic, I know people who work with them. They have been and told me personally that they've been treated well. They've been compensated fairly. And every one of our writers and creators will keep 100% of the IP. So this is a distribution issue. This is not they're buying the book. This is a distribution program. So for me, I think that's a win for our indie people.
It's a real big win for indie people. You're essentially, it's like the beginning of America's Got Talent when those people actually got a solid career. And they're like, oh my God, this person won. Here's everything you ever wanted. For an indie person, this is essentially like rolling out that red carpet for him. Like, oh, no. This way, sir.
You get to fill your grocery cart with as much products as you want in 10 minutes. Go at it.
Exactly. Right, yeah.
Let's visualize the process for everybody who was hesitant out there about submitting to Heroic because it wasn't validated. It's very much validated. C2E2 is a huge venue for her first-time awards event. Not only is it solely focused on independent comics, but independent comics of the 1% market. And for 1% winners to get into the Diamond Preview, which is a catalog distribution terms want you to have consistent content. And independent comics does not represent consistent content. Because
generally, right. Generally, it doesn't.
They don't have the budgets that Marvel, IDW, DC, and all them have that are backed by huge corporations or sometimes entertainment and holdings companies who can throw money in a project. So let's walk through it visually. You're an independent creator. You have a publisher. You've done 5 issues. You win Best Comic of the Year, Best Writer of the Year, Best Story of the Year, Best Art of the Year, whatever the case may be. Someone at one of those companies is flipping through previews and sees something they don't normally see, represented by Antarctic Press. Every one of those creators inside that indie book is instantaneously subjective to all professionals at all publishers. And if they like what they see, say they reach out to Ben Dunn in Antarctic and be like, hey, I just saw this in Diamond, and I'm curious, who made this book? And then the gap is bridged, and then new relationships are formed. That's the incentive of submitting to Heroic Awards. And we hope this year at C2E2, people will see that. And next year, like we were talking about in today's meeting, 220 comic submissions for a first-time awards is half, almost half of what Eisner gets and Ringo gets a year.
Wow.
And we all agreed. We all agreed today that next year, when we do this again, we need that. That's our...
Oh, yeah. Opinion. Yeah, we're definitely going to exceed
that's
it.
That's huge.
There's I think 3,000 indie comics on Kickstarter every year. So the market is fast. The hard thing, and I mean this is just how the reality is, this whole process began November 1st. So it's been going for 3-4 months maybe. This is a new concept. So we're just getting the ground. We're hitting the ground fast, but give us a year and we'll take off the weight, right? Is that the quote? Give us a year or give us a week? I don't know what the quote is.
I will say give it a year is fair because I started a job about a year ago as a parts guy. And because I'm lifting up heavy parts at a body shop, dude, I lost like 4 belt notches, man. It really is about a year? Yeah, no, that fits. That fits. I feel so great. But, you know, it is.
I think what Mike said was right, that this is if – who knows if we're right? We're not saying that we have all the answers. Please don't cancel us on whatever. Okay, we're not looking for haters here. We're looking for collaborators. We may not get it right. We may need some grace. Give us some grace. Help us improve. We're all for that. But we had to put a line somewhere. And it just made sense that if you had more than 1% of the comic market, you probably just not indie. And if you had less than 1%, then you definitely were indie. And that's just where we put the line. So I'm not going to argue, which I've done on my own channel a lot with people. I'm not going to argue if Image is indie or not. Eisner says they are. Ringo says they are. I'm not going to argue it. I'm just going to say they have more than 1% of the market. So we don't take any indie submissions. That's just where we're at. I mean, I we could be wrong. We could be right. We don't know yet. We're going to work it through. But we really want to focus on the companies who just don't have the highlight that they need. They need to be publicized. And our motto has three different parts. It's we're about independent people, their work. We're about the fans having their voice heard. And we're about the creations being publicized, the new artwork that we have our artists doing, having those styles and those skills being brought forward into the forefront. You would be surprised how many great techniques in art and writing have come out of indie comics that then get adopted later. And if Heroic Awards can, you know, nominate one of those great creators and they can have their skills seen, we could change the comics industry.
That's big too, because I have noticed similar styles, because I didn't really start reading comics until I got into my early 30s. I was into The Walking Dead, and my friend said, hey, if you like the show, read the comic. And I instantly, that was the rabbit hole. I just fell down, and now I'm here. But especially when the content creators I've had on, like Josh Shockley and Brandon Spicer, they send me their comics. Oh my God. That's the best part of broadcasting. I can sit here, read free comics, and then get to talk to the creator. It's
right.
The secret pleasures of having a podcast network right now. But it's one of the things that it's also really inspiring, seeing, because they obviously, you know, we become friends on Facebook, seeing how they now cross over and start working with other people that I've had on. And oh, they're cross promoting each other, and the love that you get from the indie market. I would imagine that a lot of people, once you start promoting it, would immediately jump on board, because that's just what I've experienced from the indie market.
Yeah. So, it's been, I felt the love. I'm going to say that I felt honored that some of these big companies that have supported independent comics, independent creators for dozens of years, have so quickly and easily said, you know what? I love this. We're going to support. We're going to sponsor. And our first sponsor was Gemini Comic Supply. They do the shipping supplies for comics. And then BCW, who also does comic supplies, they jumped on board. Antarctic, like we said, but Mad Cave and Onishi Press and Comics Wellspring are our print sponsor. And then media sponsors for days. We have Comics and Pop-Tarts. We have Hoven Crow Productions. Our main one is Comic Crusaders with Al Mega. We have Klep CX is his co-host. We probably have 11 total, and I'm going to forget half of them right now because there's so many on the fly. We have more sponsors as well. We have Diamond Select Toys that produce all those little, you know, figures that we always love buying at the comic cons. So I mean, we have really good sponsors and media partners, and it has been. It's been a snowball down the hill. It's been just rolling on its own. It hasn't been the strong push that's had to happen by me or by the team. We've pushed hard, but it's been just very, destined. I don't know if that's a word. Are we talking about destiny here? Is it? We're fantasy writers, so really, really honored and blessed that they would trust us with their brand and with them being a sponsor for us, and all the independent creators sending their books over and having us post and them reposting on their sites, you know, pushing their Heroic Awards. It's just been really indie, you know, it's been really indie community, and it's made me feel really good.
It should, because you guys are doing a really, really good service over there, because These amazing indie creators that I've had on, the most impressive that I always talk about, and I probably will never stop, is Carissa Grant with Holy Chaos Redemption. My God.
Worthy Chaos. Worthy Chaos.
There we go. Worthy Chaos.
Yes. She would be furious if I didn't say that.
Oh, yeah. Thank God. Because I call her the Girl Scout of indie comics because she has so much planned out in the future. And the rapid Kickstarter campaigns and the success she's gotten from that. I mean, I'm just like, wow, podcasting wise, that was like striking gold. I mean, oh my God. And she's an amazing person to talk to. It's
right.
Meeting amazing people like that. And I can't imagine having to judge, like, you know, down to the final, like, this one or that one. But I know there are people out there because I went down, said it a couple times on this podcast. We went, Frank and I went down to the Blue Hen Comic Con, and he was talking to another anchor, and I got to about like maybe like minute 8 before my eyes glazed over because they were just talking about different ways of inking and the different forms and different styles, and it was
right.
I tried to hang on like as much as I could, but eventually I got lost there. But that's how I know people who are very passionate about this, they can look at something a lot more attuned than I can and say, you know,
right.
This one actually is really good. This one I would put on a diamond publishing because that is the ultimate prize is to work with diamond.
Right.
So to have somebody, I mean, especially over 100 people, you have judging. And not
right.
all of them for everything. I feel like you guys have a really good chance of being as close to neutral as you can as far as it
right.
goes.
Yeah, and, you know, there's going to be people online that are going to shout out this and that, and they're going to complain about this and that. And we're just going to be neutral. We're going to say anyone who wants to submit, if they're less than 1%, they get to submit. We're not going to blackball people because of politics or because of whatever, this and that. We want everybody to be welcome in a big tent of independent comics. And I want to be able to have the judges come from all countries and walks of life and all these different skill sets because we don't want to have bias. One of the biggest fears in the indie community is that it's going to be a popularity contest. It's going to be, oh, they have more followers, so they're going to win. And that's what independent people have faced forever. You know, people know that character, so they have distribution, so my book's never going to beat their book. And, you know, we just don't want that to play a part. We want to have these books go out to all these judges, and then the judges just look at the actual skill and follow a rubric. See, we don't have this like some awards, where some awards are all the judges read the books, and they come together in a room, and they start arguing which book was better and why. And that's fine. You know, that's okay. That's like at home around the coffee table. You guys are doing that. That's okay. But that's not what we wanted to do. We want people to come with a rubric. Here's the scores. Score 1, score 2, score 3. Add them all together. Here's the final score. I scored all the books on the same rubric. Everything was based off the same. Now, you might ask, is the rubric fair? I think that's a fair question. And what I'll say is we got the rubric from the professionals. I asked lots of professionals to give feedback on what the scores should be, how to score, and they got back to me on answers, and that's how we got the rubric. And next year, it might be slightly varying because we'll get more feedback and we'll have an even more tight rubric, but that's how we did it. We went to the professionals, we got their feedback, and we put it in the system. And it's not about which style I like, if I like anime or not, or I like, you know, 8-bit design, or I like the 90s superhero body style, or I want to have, you know, NSFW all day long. You know, I'm not choosing what's mine that I want to do. I'm saying this is the artwork. These are the scores you can do laid out. And then this is the best one that we can find. That's what we're going to do. And you'll see. Tune in 6 weeks. Tune in. See if the judges got it right. You can decide as a viewer. See if the judges picked the best. You'll have the books up there. We'll have 5 nominees from each category. And we'll put them in after each other. Bam, 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 bam. You'll be able to see them. And you can say, well, you know what? Yeah, that was the best one. You know, or I want to get that book because now I'm interested. And I'm hoping that's what happens.
I hope so, too, because I really think that, especially being at the second like a cornerstone of the second largest Comic-Con in the country. I have to imagine that the indie community will really join together in this and realize that this is an event that we all need, you know. The core definition of a Perjanger is a person or group who love or infatuated with nerd or geek culture. And the best part about that is you can be a nerd or geek about anything. The answer is 42. But when you are a true nerd of comic culture, I mean, the community is different, as toxic as it does seem online. And you'll always get those people. They may or may not be real. But having an overall good event that highlights people and the best work of the indie crowd is, it's only going to make everybody better, because now you have an award that you can strive to win, like the Emmys or the Oscars or even, you know, Eisner. There's an award show that, hey, I got to the Heroic Awards and then I went and I got this and I got this. It boosted me for these different kind of opportunities. Right. And it makes you guys good, because you had the core idea of just believing that somebody else had a brilliant idea.
Essentially.
Also, you know,
go ahead, Mike.
I just wanted to say real quick, there will be no nudity at our awards ceremony like there was at the Oscars.
Make sure we get that in.
You got to set the audience. You know, you have to set the expectations.
Yeah, we want to make that clear.
We
don't need those rude.
We had some submissions that were inappropriate, if you will, or for adults only or what have you. And I was forced to, you know, be the gatekeeper, and I had to go back to those publishers and have them send me the edited copy, which is totally fine. That's what we have to do, you know, because these judges are volunteer, and I'm throwing them these books, and the judges have to know that they're going to be, their feelings are going to be taken into consideration. If they don't want to see it, that, I mean, we're not trying to bash anything. We just want to make sure that everybody can be welcome. And so we have to do it in a PG-13 way. You know, that's just kind of how that works.
That kind of, it makes sense though. You know, you're going to, especially for being at a Comic-Con, to have some NSFW content pop up, like, oh my God, little Jimmy, cover your eyes. Yeah.
There's rules. We have to follow the rules.
Yeah, it just kind of makes sense for a live format like that. But another thing that I did see here, and it's, I mention it because I always like to highlight teachers. It says here, you're a former professor of entrepreneurship at Linwood University.
Yeah, I taught for about 7 years in entrepreneurship in the MBA program. The people who chose their MBA, but they wanted to focus on starting their own business, I was the capstone class for them. Also, the ones who came over into the MBA program from a more art direction, so if it was fashion design or what have you, I helped them also get into the basics of business through my courses. So I was on both ends of that MBA program, and I was honored to work with those. I wouldn't call them kids. I mean, these are people older than me a lot of times.
Yeah.
These are just people wanting to be career minded, and entrepreneurship would be the way they're going. And I was glad to be able to help them with some of my knowledge that I've gained. I have been an entrepreneur for 20 years. I've started a couple multi-million-dollar companies, sold them and moved on. Sometimes you have to do that kind of thing, and life changes. And now I said, you know, what am I going to do now? And, you know, maybe I'll apply for a job, or maybe I'll work as a mentor, or maybe I'll create the Heroic Awards. And I guess Heroic Awards won.
That's a fair win. That's a big bucket of win, if I were to say. I mean, especially going from, I had Chris Pierdomenico, Delco the movie director. I had him on, and I always like to highlight teachers, because you don't know who you're going to inspire, especially from something like the Heroic Awards, or even from your time as a teacher. It's being inspired by that person who believes that you can do something amazing. It's not lost on me, because there were a lot of people that built me up along the way. and a lot of mentors, a lot of people that, especially when I started looking into podcasting over 10 years ago, I had a company with a friend. It fell out, like you're saying. Life happens.
Yeah.
But I started this one with Chris, and it was solely focused on building everybody up, having a soapbox that everybody can come to, and now having a hub that indie content creators can come to. And it's, you know, to put it in street terms, real recognizes real. You know, when I see another person building somebody up, I just released the podcast with Ryan Howitt. He's out there in Canada trying to build up comic creators out there. And that's not an easy place to do it, especially because one of the highlights of that episode I like to point out is the shipping cost from where he is to another province in the same country is it's about the same or cheaper to ship it to Texas.
Right.
Even with crossing the border and all that, and just that kind of a milestone as a content creator to have to cross. Now, if you're one of those guys and you submit to the Heroic Awards, you instantly, from a cold village in Canada, could have a V-line right to Diamond. And that is literally what you're selling.
And one of the things, and this is maybe a small matter, but I just wanted to point out, some awards you pay to enter in. I know a lot of film festivals you pay to have your film juried. We didn't want to charge the indie people any money. We didn't want to start out by having them have to ship the book to us and ship 70 books out to all the judges. We just didn't want to do that game. So we did everything digital. I like personally reading a floppy myself. I like the graphic novel as well. But I couldn't have these indie publishers fork out the couple hundred bucks to send these copies everywhere to all these judges, as well as to enter an award system. So we just did digital, which is a free transfer, and then we did no entry fee for the publishers. And I just think that's the way to go. That's how we need to support our people, is by helping them get into the race with as low cost, or in this case free, as they can.
That's big, and I didn't even think about that. A part of even just submitting to an award show is like, okay, Here's all these people you need to ship your book to. Like, why do you have a judge in Alaska and Hawaii? You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck?
Right.
That is huge.
Yeah. We tried to think about the creators. That's what we thought about. And we also want to not forget people who may sometimes be forgotten. We don't want to forget a letterer. We don't want to forget the people who are, you know, the editors. We don't want to forget the people who are laying out the book. That, I mean, mostly we talk about writers and line artists. We often don't even talk about colorists. See, we need to talk about all the aspects of comic creation, all the artists that are out there. And so we have these technical awards that we've included because we want to make sure everyone's remembered and awarded appropriately. I think that's fair, you know, and I think that our industry respects that.
It also adds a bit of the professional awards to that, because like I was saying in our meeting, it adds a flair of, and then the technical award for best this, awards always have those side awards, and you're like, oh man, but some people, especially with the advent of the internet, are watching and they're like, who's that guy? So many times when I'm even just watching a documentary with Big Brother and he's instantly like, oh, well, there's another book in the Audible just off of something we're watching, you know? And there's that kind of level to it as well.
And we're going to not only do the awards that are at C2E2, we're going to do more awards. Whether it comes 4 or 6 months later, we're going to issue more awards that we couldn't put into this first, you know, quick. We started in November, and now we're in C2E2. Mm-hmm. We're going to have additional categories like, maybe you'll be nominated, comics podcast, best comics podcast, or best character, new character in some series, or maybe, you know, it could be any kind, best promo video for your Kickstarter, because all of us need promo videos for our Kickstarters. And so whatever works for the indie community, we want to put awards out for there for that and honor those people who are doing that work.
Well, I'm so glad that you suggested me before I did, because I already had the thought. It just makes me less of a narcissist now. Like, oh, thank you. I would accept that award humbly. I have had an acceptance speech since I was 6. We'll be good.
Let me make one qualification, because this is an important qualification. Anyone who judges can't also then judge their work. Any publisher who submits can't also then be a judge. Any comics podcast that's our media partner can't also then be in the Comics Podcast Awards. Antarctic, they're our publishing sponsor.
I don't think
they can win Publisher of the Year. That's not fair.
We wanted to separate
people's interests.
It's also the perfect way to announce that I alluded to it, but I haven't announced it. I'm going to wait until this podcast, but the Protangers and Wallhangers Media Network is working with the Heroic Awards, and I am so excited. We are going to be doing the UC, the award for best writing, and the video pops up. Hey, gang, that's Purjangers and Wallhangers. That's just hashtag Purjangers Purjanging, man. And that's an opportunity that I am so excited for, just especially when you're looking at over 200 publishers seeing.
Right.
You know, Chris and I, we've been Purjangers and Wallhangers. We're going on our sixth year in November. And this fifth and sixth year have really pumped up because of the partners that we've made along the way, like Aleem Legit, like Mike, like Frank, and all of our partners, like Josh Shockley, one of our guests, and Ryan Howitt, all these people who turned me on to different guests to have on to help keep this boat afloat, floating. It really helps. And then you guys on top of that, at a left field, Mike just tosses us like a golden hand grenade. And I'm like, what?
If this is ball on the yard, you wanna play with it?
You know, it's exciting because as a creative person, I've linked on to broadcasting. But one of the things that Chris and I really like about podcasting is the editing portion, because that's also why we've brought in we've partnerships with Atlantic All Star Wrestling, as well as Orichi Wrestling and Super Crazy Wrestling. So three different separate wrestling leagues, because our just production company has just gone out there and done what, you know, is really simple. Like, we started off with going live at a business and at a live comic shop, actually, Comic Universe, one of the oldest in my area. It was owned by Frank Link. It's now owned by another guy. So the shop is still there. So that's big, but just we latched onto this community and it's been very giving back to us. And now to get the opportunity to do something great with a great event like yours of the Heroic Awards. I mean, as soon as Aleem said, "Hey man, I'm nominated," I was like, what is this? You have that wow factor online of, ooh, an award. There's instantly a, well, who are they talking about? Who won? And especially in the comic community, yeah, there's going to be good and bad. But overall, I think just the message of, well, come back next year, gang. You didn't like these. Right. Your shot is now.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be that way. I think people are going to grab onto it. To be honest, not everybody knows about it for sure. We're still new. We're still young. So the word's going to get out. And one more clarification on the submission process. Publishers submit their books. So even if a publisher has 100 books they create in a year, or they have 50 books they create in a year, they can't submit 50 books. It's a percentage of the total amount of books they create. If they create 100 books, they can submit 5, but they can't ever submit more than 5. If they create 3, they can still submit 1. If they create 3 or 4 or 5, they can submit 2. If they create 100, they still only max out at 5. We never want to have the big people who are producing lots of books to just take over the submission process. We want to limit everything and kind of quantify it so that the indie creators can be seen. And I think we've succeeded at that. Now, will this, you know, the grade scale, the weighted scale, will it alter slightly over the years? Yes. You know, we're still learning it. But the goal we have is to support the smaller creator.
Well, and that's a good goal, and especially like a nice safety check there. You know, America's built on checks and balances. You know what I mean? So having a nice check there of, okay, calm down, Junior. I know you put out a lot. Give me your five best.
Right. Yeah. And that's if they produce a whole slew. I mean, I think our average publisher submitted two is our average. Maybe it's even less than that number as in total average. So, I mean, you're talking about people who produce multiple books a year, getting to submit one or two books. That's what we're talking about. And the reason we did that was because who knows the books best? Well, the publisher knows. Who knows what's wrong with the books and what's right with the books? Well, the publisher knows. And so the publisher then submits their best work. That means we're going to already have weeded through some of the works that they themselves know didn't turn out that well. And we need to help get that help to weed through some of this because we can't read everything. Even the 100 judges, having 200 nominees is a lot. So we want to make sure that we don't overwhelm the volunteer judges. We have to put our hats off to the volunteer judges. They've stepped up. They've volunteered. They've really put their heart and mind into it, to be fair, and to get back to us their scores and to follow the rubric best they can. And I really respect them for that. So I want to thank them for that.
Oh, 100%. I mean, the judges, I mean, especially that amount of people volunteering their time to judge something. Yeah. You know, it's not something like, oh, hey, we got these three guests at a con to judge who came out, you know, who was the best Mecha Godzilla. It's a bunch of people who are very, you know, they care about this as much as you do because they realize that if this can be a staple for the indie community, now that's another feather in everybody's hat. Mm-hmm. So that there's that possibility, almost like America's Got Talent, that you could be realized as, hey, this person's really talented, they have a really good idea, or maybe they're really good at lettering. You needed a letter? Hey, this guy just won at the Heroic Awards. Why don't you get him on board? Now, there's a level of enticability, I'll say, to that award show. Because, wow, these winners are really kind of moving in the industry now. They're rubbing a lot of elbows. They're putting a lot of stuff out.
And one of the things that we made sure to do was we wanted to publicize who our judges were. A lot of people were questioning, well, who's your judge going to be? Well, because I know that person or I don't know that person. And there's all this haggling going on behind the scenes. And I said, no, we're not going to play any secrets. Here's the names of all the judges. You guys can see them. And that's posted on our social media. Because we wanted to make sure everyone knew that we were using real professionals who are working professionals in each category and that we weren't going to try to like behind the scenes it or something. Yeah. And I didn't submit any of my books. I had two books come out in 2023. I didn't submit any of my stuff because I'm the one running the thing. We have to make sure we try to be as unbiased and fair as possible. That's the goal.
Well, that's a good goal to have. I think you guys have the right mindset on the awards, and I'm even more excited about it. I knew I was going to be, but I'm even more excited about it now because I know you guys are doing it for the right reasons, and you have these checks and balances in place to make sure. Now, we're going to really highlight the best of the best. You can't over flood it, so that way this publisher wins for best publisher. You have to be very specific, and sad to say, you have to be very specific these days, but that also leads to it. It makes it everything that you're doing makes it look like it would be sponsored by somebody who's running the Emmys or the Oscars. It's one of those things that if the community stands behind it, which I think they really will, even if they can't flood the event in person, being able to see it afterwards and say, oh no. Let me check out this award show. Let me see what happened.
Well, we have an auditorium, but I think, like you said, it's a massive convention. So I think it's going to fill up fast. Our time is at 4:30, but we take over the room at 4. So anybody watching, if they're going to be at the convention, get in front of the door at 4 so you can get in and get your seat. Cause it's going to fill. And we have prizes. What the heck? You know, we're giving away door prizes. We have gift bags for the winners. We have it's a live show with live MCs. It's going to be a lot of fun. And if I was at C2E2, I would definitely be in the room. It's going to be one of the things you want to see.
Oh, absolutely. Especially when there's a live thing like that, you're already there. Hop on in. 4 is not that late. You'll have a nice experience at the show. You get to see a bunch of different comics that you wouldn't, like, logically, you wouldn't be able to entertain all of these people that you're even going to see in the award show at a big con. Because like Ryan Howitt was mentioning in a previous podcast, I think it was him. I've had so many guests on right now. I'm sorry if it was somebody else. But they mentioned how when you go to these big cons, that they're not worried about you. They're going to see one specific person, get their autograph, and dip out. Now,
that's too bad. Giving something else,
like a big event, it's going to be more enticing to them. Well, all right.
Yeah.
Well, there's an award show, and this person's here. I'm going to the award show. You going to be coming too? You have that friend who's into it. You have different things that will make a lot more people want to go if they're already there.
I think it'd be hilarious if it was like total standing room only and people just wanted to flood in and there was no room. I think that would be amazing.
Oh my God.
Sorry, fire department. Fire department marshal comes over. Nope. Sorry. Block him.
The way I look at it though, this award ceremony is Indie Comics history.
In the making.
It's one of a kind. Yeah. Representative. Anybody who's present gets to be a part of that history. It's specific to any creators who are struggling, you know, in other parts of the world. Yeah. I've had artists that work on islands that only get internet on the weekends. Or artists who only get internet 5 days a week.
Wow.
I mean, there are creators all over. I mean, I believe Carissa Grant's artist lives in another continent.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's not just, you know, localized to right here in the United States. There are people across continents through Wi-Fi that come together to make these books. It's going to be something special.
Yeah.
100%.
On that note, I just got one of our sponsors, money, sent over to the PayPal while we're on the podcast.
Ooh, breaking news. Saying,
it's nice to have a sponsor help us out with some hundreds of bucks each, you know, helping us out because we need to afford those trophies. Have you seen the trophy pictures? Oh, man.
I will be adding them in here, yeah.
They're 13 inches tall. They're about 12 inches wide because the cape is flowing. They have over five pounds of metal each. So they're weighty. They're weighty and they're big. And I'm really happy that we got something substantial. On a personal note, I was a producer of a YouTube TV show that won a Telly Award called Tattoos and Turnpikes. Amazing show. Amazing show. You definitely should watch it on YouTube if you can.
Tattoos and Turnpikes. It was one of my highlighted notes. I saw it on here, Tattoos and Turnpikes. Yeah,
it's a great show. Seriously. It's Netflix all the way, okay? And I was lucky enough to be asked to be one of the producers of the show, and I was able to, you know, give him some cash to get that going when I back had my businesses going. And we won a Telly Award. And the Telly Award comes in the mail. And I'm holding it, and it's like weighty. And this is a metal beast. This is beautiful. And I said, that's what the Heroic Awards needs. Not some $20 dinky, you know, Amazon plastic trophy that was supposed to go to a kid's soccer tournament, which is great. My kid plays soccer, whatever. But we wanted something more substantial for the Heroic Awards.
That means something. I mean, especially a weighty award. It's worse. It's just horrible if you have, I've won five awards and you're juggling them. You shouldn't be able to juggle your award.
No, that'd be too heavy for that. Yeah. So I know we're really honored with that. We're getting them here by the end of the month. And we'll definitely be publicizing videos of holding them and showing people what the heck this is. It's a beautiful piece.
I can't wait for videos. People to see it. Especially with unboxing the whole videos. Thing. Oh, unboxing? Yeah. Oh, that would be big.
Yeah. Press out the package.
Yeah. Some nice unboxing. Well, just not on TikTok because that may go away soon.
I better head back out, but I really appreciate you guys having me on tonight. I'm so pleased for Perjangers and Wallbangers. Is that how you say it?
I always let the guest just try to say it after a while because it's
Wallhangers, maybe?
It's usually the only real word that people have. Everybody gets Perjangers, right? It's great. Yeah. I love that. I just can't wait to see what you mix it with, because it's always something entertaining.
Yeah. So you guys were on the team. You guys were on the team, and I really appreciate you being on there and helping us out with our graphics and being our sponsor in that way. We need all the people we can get. And what I always tell everybody is, if you want to do anything, do it. If somebody, when Comics Illustrated, the magazine, came out last October, I messaged the Wheelers and I said, hey, let me write some articles for you. And they're like, why? And I said, because I want to do it. You know, let me get in, you know. And so I was on their staff writer for several months, and I loved doing it. And it was a great piece. I loved their work. And then I started doing the Heroic Awards, and Perjangers comes up and Mike comes up. Hey, let's do something. I'm like, yeah, let's do something. If you're an entrepreneur out there, if you're a comics creator, if you're whatever you are, just get to doing it. That's the advice I can throw out to you. Because if you start doing it, something's going to happen. And you don't know what it's going to be. You don't know who you're going to meet. You don't know who's going to jump on board. But just get to doing something, because that's what life's about.
I started this journey 10 years with a friend of mine saying, hey, I want to do a video game podcast with you, because nobody knows the video game industry like me, like you do. What's a podcast? He says, internet radio show. When I was in eighth grade, I did, local radio, but national at the same time, WMMR in Philadelphia. My brother and I did bit comedy on the radio as Chuck and Charlie Stoney, two stoner brothers. And this is back in 2001, 2002. So I had a broadcasting background. So I was like, absolutely, I'll do that. And I haven't stopped ever since, because this is an important platform, especially for people like yourself who have an important event, an important thing going on. And when you have the next awards in 6 months coming out, we'll have to have you back on. I need people to keep pushing this event, because this needs to be the next big award show that everybody's talking about.
Yep. Thank you very much, guys. Thanks, Mike, for connecting us and for all the work you're doing. We're all together on a team. I appreciate it.
I can't wait till everybody gets to see the finished product and how hard we're all going to be working on it. And until the next hunt, gang, I always like to end off the podcast the same way. We love you. We miss you. We want to see you next week. Until then, game on, boys and girls. Bye-bye. Bye.